This is Wells Tech, a weekly show exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. Your hosts are Sally Draper and Martin Spriggs. Wells Tech is produced by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Welcome to Wells Tech, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs with episode 549. We're recording it on May 11th, a little bit ahead of time, but we do that once in a while when schedules suggest it. And joining me on our technology podcast here, Technology and Ministry, is Sally Draper. Hey, Sally, how are you?
I am very good, Martin. I learned a new word recently, and I am debating whether it applies to me or not. Dictionary.com word of the day from this week was infomania. Have you heard of infomania?
I haven't, so tell me all about it.
It's in regard to digital technology, an obsessive need to constantly check emails, social media websites, online news, etc., or the effects of this obsession, especially a decline in the ability to concentrate. So I am waging the good battle to not be an infomaniac, that I don't have a decline in my ability to concentrate because of all this information.
Hey, you unplug once a year. You do that one day, right?
That's right.
I think you're safe.
It's National Day of Unplugging, but yeah. It is truly a battle, and it's something that I think maybe different generations handle differently as well. So I'm right there on the edge of the baby boomer into Gen X, and I think the younger generations possibly are even more connected to their devices and their social channels and things than the older ones. I don't know
if that's true. Certainly more a part of them. They've grown up and know nothing but. Yeah, that's interesting. I think there's an ongoing debate, and I think that debate is going to get stronger and stronger. We're seeing that as we talk to these seminary students this month about some of these things, and next week we're going to hear about that too. But it's interesting to learn how these different generations think, what's important to them, how they process information, where their priorities are. And it's not always what you think. It's very difficult for somebody in one generation to kind of get another generation. That's why these our conversations with these seminarians is interesting, because they're going to have to do that. They're going to get out into ministry, and they can't just minister to their own generation, which they hopefully will get. They've got to minister to our generation, you know, my generation, your generation, younger generations, generations to come. So it's worthy study to kind of understand where they're coming from, at least a little bit better. Now, ministry is not all about science, of course, but I think the more you know, I think it's helpful.
Definitely. So yes, exactly. We were blessed to talk to three seminarians, spreading it over 3 weeks here on Wells Tech. We're in week two of that. And this week we feature a discussion with Jason Zulke, who decided to do his senior thesis on evangelizing millennials. So reaching out to that age group, 80s to mid to late 90s would be the years they were born. They're called Gen Y or millennials. And
our kids, right?
Yeah, definitely relate to that age group and see some definite characteristics that Jason brings out in his paper. Very interesting stuff.
Yeah, so let's listen to him talk about his thesis, Evangelizing Millennials, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit more about it. So here is Jason.
Happy to have joining us this afternoon, Jason Zulke, who's a senior at Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary. Welcome, Jason.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you. We are doing a little mini series this month in honor of graduation that's upcoming for you seminarians as you look forward to that. We've invited three different guys to tell us a little bit about their senior theses that as part of the final work that you're doing there at seminary. Your topic was particularly interesting to us, but maybe before we dive into that, you can tell us a little bit about Jason. Maybe some of your history, family, ministry experiences, hometown, those kind of fun things.
Sure. My background's actually fairly simple. I'm from around Sullivan, Wisconsin. My dad's got a farm around there that's been on the family for a long time now. And I went to Lakeside Lutheran High School, and after going to St. Peter's Lutheran in Helmville, Wisconsin. So I've been in a Lutheran system the whole time. And the only ministry experience I had before college even was helping out with BBS at church. I got a couple of Missouri Synod aunts who are teachers. But other than that, ministry is something that the rest of my family really is not a part of publicly. So the decision to go to MLC and to go on the pastor track really was it was a last-minute decision. It was actually like second semester senior year. So I just came off the farm, and I was really working toward I don't really know what. And then second semester senior year of high school, I decided to go to MLC and try out the pastor track. And the more you got into it, the more it kind of draws you in. So I've pursued that ever since. So I mean, that really is my history. That's all the ministry experience I have other than my vicar year last year. So,
and where did you vicar?
Down in Florida.
Oh, Beverly Hills, nice. Florida. Nice. Yeah. Good experience down there, I'm sure.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Awesome.
Very nice. So last week we talked to your classmate, Bill Schubert, about Gen Z or iGen. Your topic takes us a generation before that for Gen Y or millennials. What made you choose that topic, and how did you come up with that for your project?
You know, honestly, it's because there weren't a lot of millennials down in Florida at the church I was at.
Yeah, I bet.
There were a couple of younger families, but outside of my wife and myself, there's maybe one other family or two, and then the rest were all basically retirees. So it's my lack of experience with millennials that kind of interested me. And being technically a millennial myself, I don't know much about most millennials. I'm very atypical for a millennial. I don't have a lot of the characteristics of most millennials. So I just kind of felt, well, if I'm going to be socializing and associating and trying to minister to people of my own generation, I should probably understand them better, because I don't fit in with most of them, according to most of the statistics. So it really was my lack of knowledge of millennials and inexperience that I thought I might as well dig into it if it's such a big topic right now. So that's really what I did. And it took me a while to finally zero in on what I wanted to learn about, because to just say I want to learn about millennials is such a broad thing. And there's so many different things to the millennial generation that they're so different from any generation before them really are. So to try to narrow it down is really, really hard. And ultimately, the question that everyone's asking is how to get them into church. So that's kind of what I finally decided to narrow it down to is how can we evangelize to millennials? How can we get them into the church? Because it just doesn't seem to be happening. And I know the Synod as a whole is doing a lot more study on this than I have. I've uncovered just a small, small slice of the pie that there really is out there. So the stuff that I've learned is really minimal compared to the people who are working on this full time. It's kind of interesting. There are a lot of different things that you discover when you dig into millennials and you learn about them and the things that people are written about them. So,
very good. I'm just thinking that you're fixing to be in that pastor role, and many pastors out there, I'm sure, would have great interest. What kind of insights did you gain about the millennial generation that applies to evangelizing them?
You know, one of the things that I learned that kind of, I don't know if it was a shock to me, but the thing is, millennials don't dislike church and religion. The problems that millennials have is that the problem they have with Christianity is that one, it says other religions are bad. I mean, millennials have grown up in a generation where acceptance of everyone is just the norm. They come that there's a background of millennials that is so diverse. It comes with a lot of different religions. There's a lot of different racial backgrounds. There's a lot of different school backgrounds, and school's been pushed real hard. And so everyone's got a different aspect to life that they think about. And for them to think that this or that is the right way, when there are so many different ways out there for them, it's kind of a foreign concept. And so for Christianity to say, that's all wrong. This is what you need. This is what has to be right. There is no other way. It really doesn't rub them the right way at all. And second, again, they don't hate Christianity, but they also don't like that Christians don't always practice what they preach, which being sinners in this world, we're never going to be able to do that perfectly. And that's the hard part. That's what's kind of annoying. There's really no good way around that argument. And I read there was one book by a guy named Kinneman, I think was his last name, and he had worked for the Pew Research Center. And he actually did studies on this, and he has legit scientific statistics to show what millennials think of Christians and how they are hypocritical. They think that Christians are too politically involved and that they're homosexual haters and things like that. And unfortunately, there's a large number of Christians in the country that do come across that way. I mean, the Wells is such a small synod that they don't represent the very large body of Christianity. But he also found that most of these answers that millennials gave about being homosexual haters and being hypocrites and everything, that's from personal experience that they've had with Christians and in churches. This is not just a general opinion that they have that's floating around out there. But what Kinman found was he found the millennials who had personal experiences with Christians in church to make sure that this was a legitimate answer, that it wasn't just a general, oh, that's what everyone is saying. So that's kind of what's frustrating. They don't hate religion. They don't hate Christianity, but they don't like what Christians do because it's not what Christianity says. And again, there's no real good way around that because we're not going to be able to do that perfectly like we want to in this world. So it's frustrating. It's hard.
Right. So how does that affect how we approach them? What kind of techniques we use, what makes our approach necessarily different, as we try and minister to them?
My wife is very good at, she's a millennial, of course, and she's a little more typical than I am, and she reminds me of this quite a bit. What they need to see first is just who you are as a person. If you're going to come to them and come to them as a representative of the church as a whole, which is what we do, but if you come off that way, it's going to be very easy for them to just shut you down and say, well, I don't care. You guys are not, who you say you are. When they get to know you as a person, it's much easier than to draw them in, and they'll listen to you much, much more easily.
So they want a relationship.
They want a relationship.
Dealing with a person, not an institution.
Right. And that really is nothing new. My personal opinion, what I came to in my thesis ultimately was this friendship evangelism, which is by no means a new concept, but it's something that we need to push, I think, especially on members and get them to realize that you need to be out in the community. Even pastors, there was, when we had mission and ministry here at the seminary, there was one pastor who gave a presentation, and it was basically a different way to do evangelism. And his idea was that you find the things that you like to do in the community, and you just go do them. So that people get to know you and know who you are. Do the thing. If you like this, do that. If you like that, do that. And it can really lead to some good relationships and some good inroads so that people will get to see you as a person and not as just an organization. And then they can see, well, that's what a Christian is like. And then you can slowly start to explain more things to them. But to come off as an organization and spout doctrine at them right away, it doesn't work. That's how the other generations before have done it. They've always been kind of doctrine-based. It kind of has to come second. You've got to get to make a friendship first. So that's kind of the important thing. I think you always got to remember that. You always got to make friends with them first.
That's awesome. So if you were to look into your future as Pastor Zuhlke, maybe 5 years from now, maybe you'll be coaching a little league team or I don't know, playing bridge with someone in a bridge club. I don't know, but just doing kind of things that interest you, but engaging with people outside of your Wells bubble, perhaps.
Right. And that's one of the challenges. If you're going to try to get your congregation involved in this, one, to try and get millennials involved is difficult because even millennials within the church, they've grown up with the same ideologies that the rest of millennials have. And so it's still going to be hard to get them to tell their friends, this is really what's right. And to get other people to do it, you have to push them, like you said, outside of the bubble. They got to get outside the comfort zone. People don't like to do that. And so to tell your congregation, to tell your friends, look, you need to push yourself. put yourself in an uncomfortable situation so that you can get to know these people, which for the most part, those always end up positive, I think, anyway, regardless of how it turns out. So it's just getting people to go beyond that line, which is really, really hard.
All right.
Interesting. So it sounds, and kind of the focus on your paper, or at least it's in the title, is friendship evangelism. And it sounds like that's really the application here. That's the approach that is going to work best with this particular generation. Build the relationship, build the trust, have the conversation, and then obviously share the truths of Scripture along the way. And that's the best way to bring them along.
Right, right. And it's once you get that friendship made, because Christianity has everything that millennials want. It's got a solid truth that doesn't change. It is about accepting everybody, and yet being an individual is an individual part of the body of the church and so much more. So it has everything they want, but it's just you have to make that friendship first.
And so does that change the approach? Traditionally, our churches have kind of had a come and see strategy, you know, come to our worship service and, you know, worship with us. Does that lead maybe to a different mentality in dealing with this generation? So it's not a come and see, it's a let's meet, let's have a conversation, meet over a drink or on the softball diamond and, you know, build a relationship that way. And then kind of that invitation once that trust is built.
Yeah. To just say, come and see right away. I mean, you have to give them a good reason to come and see, to give them a good reason to show that you're not just an organization of, you know, the political homosexual.
Right. Maybe it's not a come and see to worship service. Maybe it's a come and see to a, you know, a social event or something like that. Right.
Right. And that's why a lot of churches now are pushing those big social events that you can invite people to, even just to get your name up there, just to show that the church, just to show the church is there, and to show what the church really is for. So, yeah, it's, and again, you know, the generation before, it's always kind of been, churches have been known, this is the church that teaches this doctrine, this is the church that teaches that doctrine, and, you know, it would always be, this is what we believe, come and see this, and right, like you said, and that just doesn't work, because they don't care about that, that's not what they're looking for, because to them, the doctrine doesn't matter, the point is that you're a person who is accepting, and who does love, and who's going to be okay with them.
Interesting. Very good. Well, we appreciate taking a look at all of the research that you did for that senior thesis, and we certainly pray God's blessings on the upcoming big events in your life. We'll be watching on call day for your name and looking forward to seeing where you'll be serving in the future.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Our pleasure. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Jason, thank you for taking the time out of what I'm sure is a busy time for seminary seniors. They're cramming because they're going to be in real life situations very shortly. And call day is actually call day would have happened probably by the time this comes out. No, is that the following week?
It's the week after this.
Week after, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so he's still waiting. It's interesting. We talk to these guys, and then we're going to hear their name on call day, and we know where they're going to be plying their trade and some of the things they've learned here. So interesting stuff.
Definitely. And I got to take my hat off to Jason because he definitely explored an area that he didn't have experience with. So hopefully that's going to pay off for him as he moves into his own parish and deals with all different age groups and things. Yep. So
one thing I found interesting, and it's, well, and but it's not surprising, is that friendship evangelism is really important to this generation. I think it's important to every generation, maybe different channels through which that happens. Definitely the face-to-face friendship evangelism that he's talking about, I think, is important. And boy, it certainly is for our generation. And, you know, that's just a part of ministry.
Definitely got my wheels turning about ways to be more involved
right,
in the community, in activities and things, you know, just different groups and things that are happening on the local level.
Where they're at, yes.
Meet people, exactly.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Great way to make new friends.
Awesome. So, Jason, thank you and blessings on your ministry. We'll be excited to see where the Lord is going to take you in a week or so here. So, All right, let's move on to news in tech. And this past week was a big, big news week because the major technology players all had conferences. Now, we were a little bit ahead of Apple's conference, but both Microsoft and Google had their big developer conferences, and usually at those conferences, they announce some things that are happening to their platform or hardware products and those kinds of things. And this year was no different. Microsoft started it out early last week on in their Microsoft Build conference. That was Monday and Tuesday, I believe. And we'll put a link in the show notes to a Verge article entitled "The Six Biggest Announcements from Microsoft Build 2018." A couple that might be interesting to us. Microsoft has got out of the phone business a couple years ago, but that doesn't mean they haven't stopped creating phone technology. So they're what they're trying to do is connect your phone, whether that's an Android or a an iPhone, to the Windows operating system so that you can essentially use some of your phone's features on the computer. One that comes to mind specifically is text messaging. You know, it's kind of difficult. Maybe you've got this down, Sally, but I find it difficult to peck out text messages on my phone on these soft keyboards. They did a lot better with the harder keyboards, with the hard keys, but maybe my fingers are too fat or the keyboards really weren't made for me. But I find it a lot easier if I'm at my desk to engage in text messaging, and I use Messenger sometimes even to do that, to pound out these SMS messages right on the computer. So they're launching a technology that will connect those. Another connection they're making is they're allowing Cortana, which is their digital voice assistant, to talk to Alexa, which is Amazon's digital assistant. So they had a kind of an interesting demo on stage where Cortana and Alexa were working hand in hand. So I think that'll make it better because those two systems have different information. So, for instance, my calendar information is all in Microsoft, in Outlook, and to allow Alexa and Cortana to talk would allow Alexa to dip into to the calendar that I'm after, and I don't have to kind of live in one or the other. I can live in both. So this article has a bunch of other stuff that's going on in the Microsoft world. So take a look at that. And then Google had their conference the same week. I don't know if they coordinated this or not. I wouldn't think they'd want to do that, but it just kind of happened that way. It's called Google I/O. Yeah, both of these were out on the West Coast, and Google announced the latest Android version, Android P. They name these after desserts or treats, so it's always a debate what the next letter is going to represent. They didn't share that, but Android P could be almost anything. Some new skills for their Google Assistant, some new voices. Something that was, I think, pretty controversial, called Google Duplex, which allows you to use your Google Assistant to proxy requests that you might make to real people. So you could, let's say, tell your Google Assistant, hey, make a reservation for me at such and such a restaurant. And now Google Assistant will make the call and have a conversation with whoever is answering, kind of a very human-esque conversation where they're asking for a reservation for four, and can it be between 12 and 1, and table by the not by the kitchen, you know. And it was kind of eerie. I don't know if I'm really looking forward to that kind of a future, but it was very impressive how lifelike the Google Assistant was, so much so that the person on the other end wouldn't, unless you got into some really detailed questions, probably wouldn't know that you're talking to a digital assistant and not a real person. So a little bit of an uncanny valley kind of thing. So we'll see where that goes. But the technology, I think, still has a way to go, but it's getting closer, Sally. So those were the two big conferences, and saw a little bit of the news coming out of them.
Yep. Microsoft had 6 things and Google had 10. I wonder if that is any indicator of anything. I don't know.
Sometimes these things get announced and, you know, they never see the light of day either. So, or mm-hmm. at least not in the rendition or presentation that we saw at the conference. So So that is the news in tech. Let's go on to news in Wells. What's happening in our circles, Sally?
We've mentioned already that Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary graduation, call service and graduation are coming up May 24th and 25th, so end of next week. And call service will be on Thursday the 24th at 10 a.m. There's also a commencement concert that evening at 7 p.m. on the 24th. You can watch all of this via live stream from the Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary website. Graduation is Friday the 25th at 10 a.m. Definite cause for rejoicing. So. Tune in.
Need experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We want to mention again that we are looking for presenters for our Wells Education Technology and Leadership Summit happening in June of 2019. We're going to be gathering at the Kalahari Resort in Wisconsin, Dells, Wisconsin, and we'd love it if you were one of our presenters. So if you have a topic that would be interesting to others interested in education, technology, and leadership and ministry efforts, we would welcome you submitting your idea. We'll have a link in the show notes to our call for presenters page. And the deadline is approaching, Martin. It's May 31st. So it's time to put on your thinking cap, folks, and get your submissions in so we can consider you for as a presenter at our conference next summer.
Yep. Feel free to submit more than one or to tell us about others that you have heard or would maybe think would be great presenters for this conference. And the neat thing about it is it's not just technology, although that's kind of what we're pushing, but you have leadership and education. So all of those areas we're looking for presenters in.
Mm-hmm. And then finally, I just wanted to make mention, I've gotten a couple of emails. I subscribe to Kingdom Workers email list. And just recently, they announced a couple of job openings that they're looking to fill there at Kingdom Workers. The first one is for a copy and social media manager. Interesting job title, probably didn't exist 5 years ago or so because those are new areas. But the summary says the responsibilities include maintaining all communication materials, making sure they're completed in a timely and professional manner, communicating the Kingdom Workers brand. In addition, this role will be responsible for social media for Kingdom Workers. So sounds like a fun job. If anyone's interested, you can find the link in our show notes, and the application and ability to upload your resume, et cetera, is all right there on the job description page. And then just yesterday, they announced a job as a senior director of programs for Kingdom Workers, reporting to the CEO. The responsibilities of this role include leading the development and execution of all Kingdom Workers community ministry programs and all programs associated functions. You'll work with the CEO to collaboratively create and maintain Christ-focused and Great Commission-driven culture and environment for the Kingdom Workers organization. Again, sounds like a really exciting position, and there's a place there to apply, to learn more, submit your resume, whatever. And so check out those links if those may be of interest to you.
It's job season, so. Mm-hmm. All right. I think we have reached a point in our show, Sally, where we take a little bit of time to share with the class some things, some tips or tools, some picks that we find interesting and hopefully you will as well. So what's your pick this week?
My pick is something new or maybe quasi-new from Google called the Virtual Reality Tour Creator. You can find it at vr.google.com/tourcreator. And it allows you to take photos, typically the 360 type photos that you can do even with your smartphone. And you can take multiple photos and stitch them together into a virtual tour. So we've talked before on the show, Martin, about taking these 360 photos. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty easy to do. It guides you on your phone to move to the next area and pause and wait for it to grab the image and that kind of thing. What's different about this is that it actually stitches them together into combining multiple photos. And so you can have a set of these. They are embeddable once you've built this tour. And the big thing is you can add these information overlays where you add text and things about areas of the photos. You can put little clickable icons on your photos. And then, like I said, add multiple 3D or 360 degree photos and these information points, and it becomes a tour. Now, the one I'm showing on screen for those of you watching the video is actually a tour of the Seven Wonders of the World. But you could do this in your church or school facility if you wanted, and add a 3D tour to your website. It works by dragging around and looking at the photos. It also works in Google Cardboard. So if you want it to be a virtual reality kind of thing, then it will work in that way as well. So I thought teachers may be interested in having their students create virtual tours, or just creating one for your church or school, or church and school, to post on your website. I know several years ago I was involved in someone coming to MLC to put together a tour of this nature on the MLC campus, and it, you know, had different qualities and things, but the concept is the 360 degree photos, which you can now do with your smartphone. So it's neat that Google's tied this together, packaged it in something called their Tour Creator.
Nice. I think I'm going to be looking forward to the virtual tour of your new home. It'd be kind of cool, huh?
Yeah, I'm very short. Our new home, for those of you that aren't aware, we're hitting the road. We're becoming location independent in the Draper household. We're going to be living in an RV and traveling all over the country. I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, our virtual tour will be a short one because it's about 280 square feet, maybe something like that. So
perfect for that application.
That's right. True. It'd be interesting.
Very good. My pick of the week is a Windows tip. And many of you probably noticed that Windows 10, if you're on Windows 10, was suggesting that you upgrade to what is called the April 2018 update. I didn't call it that, but it was a big one, and it probably took a little bit of time to download and get installed, and hopefully all went well. There were some issues, and I think hopefully they've got those ironed out. But what happens sometimes with those Windows upgrades, in fact, all Windows upgrades, is they leave some residue on your disk. In fact, those of you that have limited disk space, and I know a number of you probably have Windows 10 machines that are working on SSDs, and SSDs don't come in super big sizes, or at least if they do, they cost a ton of money. So many of you maybe have 128 gig or 256, and when these Windows updates get installed, they leave 10 to 20 gigs on your drive of old stuff that you don't use. It's in that windows.old folder. Maybe you've seen that around. This article walks you through how to clean that up and save yourself that 10 to 20 gigs, which may be really important to you. You may be starved for space, so you can get rid of this. One thing to note, that if you do this, you can't undo the update, because that's how the update gets undone. The article was interesting because it told me a couple things that I didn't know. One is that actually this goes away after 10 days anyway. If you can wait the 10 days, go ahead. If not, then follow the instructions here. There's three ways to do it in typical Microsoft fashion. You can do it through what's called Storage Sense. There's another technique through the Temporary Files area. And then finally, you can do it through Disk Cleanup. All of these are similar approaches, but they have a quick step-by-step, and they have some screen diagrams, and it's actually very easy to do. I did this the other day, and I think I saved about 15 gigs on my machine, and you can do that as well. So just a quick tip, if you're really starved for space, or you're really getting these messages that, hey, there's some problems with storage space, this is a way to clean that up. And especially if you feel that it's stable enough that you don't need to go back, this is a good way to do it. Now, having said that, you can go back, but you have to do a kind of a reinstall, which takes a little bit longer, and you kind of have to start fresh, which sometimes is not an all bad idea either, depending on how much you've got invested in the setup that you've got. So that is my pick of the week.
Great pick, Martin. I had the update applied I want to say it was Tuesday evening, like as I shut down my computer, it installed updates. When I booted up Wednesday morning, it, told me it was completing the update process mm-hmm. and things. And then during the day, I had a random power down on my computer and I gasped. No. And it was totally random. There was no blue screen of death. There was no nothing. It just powered down completely.
Said, I'm tired.
Yeah.
Not enough energy. I need to sleep.
The verdict's still out for me on this recent update.
Yeah, I wouldn't suggest you do this yet. So.
Yeah. I'm not going to be cleaning up. No.
All right. You probably have enough disk space there anyway. Hopefully we try and treat our employees well. Give them enough space. All right, let's move on to ministry resources.
And we were happy to hear from Pastor Brock Groth this week.
Yeah,
you may remember.
Yeah.
Right. Pastor Groth was on the show a few months ago, and he was showing us his website called Understand Christianity, understandchristianity.com. And it's basically a personal project of his to write up all of his notes from all of his training that he's received and various research that he's done and things throughout his college, seminary career, and beyond. And one of the neatest areas of the website, as we explored it then, was this timelines area where he put together a variety of interactive type multimedia timelines of different Bible topics. Well, Pastor Groth wrote to us just this week to tell us that he has a new timeline. It's titled Chronology of Jesus' Life and Ministry, and it's based on a map of the Holy Land. And there are flashing points on the map throughout all of Galilee, Samaria, down into Judea, where Jerusalem is and everything. So there's all these dots on the map, and they're color-coded, and the dots represent different times of Jesus' life, his age at different times of his life. And so you can zero in on things, you know, for instance, from when he was in his latter Judean ministry, from 38 to 47 AD, I assume that is. Yeah, or that's just the dot number. Sorry, that's not related to the years or how old he was, but just the numbering system of the dots. So if you look for the dark red, it's going to be just before Holy Week, the ministry he did just before Holy Week. Each of the dots that's flashing is associated with a overlay that explains what happened at that location on the map. And also many of them are clickable, and it opens up the Bible passage, the reference that came from on Bible Gateway. So you can read the Bible passages that are associated with each of the points on the map. I can see this being a great resource to share with congregation members or to use in a classroom as you're studying. There's dots out in the middle of the Sea of Galilee, assuming when he walked on the water and different things like that. Dots for where he appeared after his resurrection. Just all kinds of history here associated with the map of the Holy Land and Jesus' life. So great stuff. We really appreciate you sharing it and reminding us of your great website, understandchristianity.com. Thanks, mm-hmm. Pastor Groth.
Very nice, Brock. Thank you for sharing that. Great for personal study or for use in Bible class, something like that. So excellent. All right. I think we're up to our community feedback segment.
And yeah, I just want to switch gears a little bit and make mention of a Facebook group, Wells Intersections. We've talked about Wells Intersections in the past. It's a group of people using technology and ministry. It kind of spun out after our Wells Tech 2015 conference. Pastor James Aderman founded the group and regularly shares great content, ideas for using technology and ministry in various ways. Recently, Gina Zimpelman asked a question, asking people to compare Constant Contact to MailChimp for e-newsletter type capabilities. And how it integrates with perhaps with donor databases or any constraints Constant Contact or MailChimp may have, what would make you choose one or the other? And it was interesting, the response. Several people have used both. Many are just using the thing they started with, and it seemed very slanted toward MailChimp. Like, most people were saying really great things about their use of MailChimp. Either they've used both or they never bothered to try Constant Contact because MailChimp is doing the job for them. As far as Gina's specific questions, she asked about using Lyst and tracking whether people unsubscribe from a certain mail list or unsubscribe overall. And that was some of her frustrating points with Constant Contact. And people assured her that you can get all kinds of stats in MailChimp, and it's answering those questions for them without any difficulties. So great conversation here. I'd encourage you, if you aren't a member of the Wells Intersections group, to go over and request membership. And you can find another good place to ask techies about tech and ministry topics. So good stuff.
If it matters, we at the Senate office here use MailChimp for a number of things, Wells Daily Devotion, those kinds of things, and I found it to be very workable, usable. If you're not using something like that in your congregation or school and you do have an electronic communication strategy, I'd consider something like that. It does give you a lot of benefits, from allowing your users to subscribe and unsubscribe, to segment lists, to track usage, so you can kind of rate or understand the effectiveness of your communications. Did they open an email? Did they click on a link? Those kinds of things. So, well worth it, and in many cases, no cost, especially for lower volumes. So. Mm-hmm. Sally, we are up to the video of the week.
And that ties in with the news of the week. We have a video, a portion of the Microsoft Build Conference centered around that Cortana Alexa conversation capability. Microsoft actually invited someone from Amazon to come.
Yeah, that was a shocker too.
And do the demo with them. So that both the Microsoft gal and the Amazon guy had their two systems talking to each other, calling up things from one direction or the other, and it seemed to work seamlessly in their demonstration. So good. Pretty cool technology.
Good. Well, that's going to about do it for this week. We have one more week of seminarians, and that'll be Julius Below. He's going to join us next week to talk about a very intriguing topic, biblical text messages, the effect of Bible software on seminary students. We had kind of a lively chat about the pluses and minuses of that, and so you're going to want to tune in next week to hear about that topic. And as we close that, looking forward to that.
Yeah, maybe the first time ever that we've had Swedish spoken on Wells Tech.
That's
podcast.
Right.
You don't want to miss that.
I forgot about that. So, oh yeah. So let's wrap it up, Sally, and thank you, listeners, for joining us once again. We really appreciate you taking the time. We should maybe mention before we say goodbye that you can be a part of the show, and we would really encourage you to take advantage of that. If you go to our show notes page, wellstech.wells.net, you can see obviously everything that we talked about. Sally just does a tremendous job at keeping that up to date. But you have the opportunity to communicate with us through any of the links at the top right, with all the social media that we're involved with, or just to leave a comment on any of the shows themselves. You can leave a voicemail. You can send us an email, wellstech@wells.net. Any of those will get your information to us. Could be a question, comment, suggestion, any of those things. So please consider joining the conversation. And as I mentioned, thank you for joining us today. We will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.